As always, we thank the Frohlo Financial Group for sponsoring the afternoon call for the year. And a special thank you this week to Dr. Mark Brandis and Nancy Eisenberg in honor and a gratitude of our afternoon kollel Rebbeim, which include yours truly, and Rabbi Moskowitz, Rabbi Shaker, Rabbi Shabtai, Rabbi Sugarman, Rabbi Wexler, and Rabbi Mirzov. So thank you very much for that recognition and appreciation. Okay, we're picking up where we last left off, which is we had begun the sugya of Ein Isser Chal Al Isser. It's a Shas sugya. Again, the definition for us of a Shas sugya were sugyas that transcend any particular Seder in Shas, but cover several Sedarim and areas of Halacha. And Ein Isser Chal Al Isser certainly qualifies as one of them. There's more copies up here. So just to review what we saw last week, and then I don't want to spend the whole time reviewing. I want to make more progress and pick up where we left off. So we began by saying the principle of Ein Isser Chal Al Isser. If there's a prohibition in place that comes with accountability or consequence, you cannot be liable twice for the same act. That's the rule. It's a rule we mentioned that doesn't appear anywhere in the Mishnah. Even in the Gemara, is only attributed to one town of Reb Shimon, and the Gemara spends more time on its exceptions than it does the rule. But the rule is, Ein Isser Chal Al Isser, a prohibition is enforced, is in place. You cannot be accountable or liable for a second prohibition. There are several exceptions. We discussed these at length. The Isser Mosif, if the second prohibition adds a greater degree of applicability, it applies to more people. So for example, only the Kohen Gadol can't marry an Almana, but a regular Kohen can't marry a Grusha. So if a Kohen Gadol marries a woman who is both an Almana and a Grusha, you would say Isser Chal Al Isser if she was first an Almana and then a Grusha. Since Grusha is an Isser Mosif, it adds more people. Kohen Gadol is singular. He's only the Kohen Gadol. Only he is prohibited to marry a widow, an Almana. But when the woman subsequently became a divorcee, a Grusha, now she became forbidden to every Kohen on the planet. That expanded the category. So therefore, it's an exception to the rule. The Kohen Gadol marries a woman, or is intimate with a woman, who first was an Almana and then a Grusha. You would say Isser Chal Al Isser, because the Isser Grusha is Mosif. It expands the category. The second exception was an Isser Kolel. Isser Kolel means not that there is more people to whom it applies, but it applies to you in more ways. So for example, if you eat an Avela, an animal that died other than through Shechita, and if you eat it on Yom Kippur is an Isser Kolel. It includes other foods. On a weekday, you're only not allowed to eat that Avela. If you eat the Avela on Yom Kippur and you violate Yom Kippur expands the category for you to other foods. That's called an Isser Kolel. We also come on, Kedushin has another exception, Isser Chamur. If the second prohibition adds a greater degree of accountability. So, if you eat something that was only punishable with Malkus, eat something, you violate something, and then the second Isser adds an Isser Hana'a. Let's say, I'm sorry, not Malkus. The first Isser is an Isser Achila, and the second Isser adds an Isser Hana'a. You've now intensified the, or expanded what in what way it's prohibited to you. And the fourth exception was Bas Achas, was if the Isurim fall simultaneously, and as I mentioned, the Shagas Aryeh explains, not so much because both should apply, but we don't know which one to not apply. When both happen simultaneously, even where it's not Mosif or Kolol or Chamor, it doesn't really expand it in any direction. It doesn't apply to more people, it doesn't apply to you with more things, and it doesn't apply in a different way. But if it's Bas Achas, if it both happens simultaneously, then it will be Usur as well. So the Rambam codified this in source page number 1, Hilchos Isurei Bia. We're not going to read it again, but if you remember, we came up with this phenomenal Shidduch resume of the woman who is an Almana, Grusha, Chalala, Zona. And the Kohen Gadol's Baaleha, he's Chayav 4 Malkus. He's liable 4 times. Why? Because in each case it added. First an Almana was only Usur to him. Then she was a Grusha. Then a Chalala meant now she can't eat Truma. And now a Zona meant she'd be Usur to a Yisrael if she was Mizana Tachtav. So each time it added more people, so therefore Isser Chalal Isser Chalal Isser Chalal Isser, Kohen Gadol will be liable 4 times. If in fact her resume though was the reverse, she started out as a young lady as a Zona. Then she became a Chalala. Then she became a Grusha. And finally she became an Almana. Then the Kohen Gadol would only get one set of Malkus, because each time you were actually not expanding, you were going to a more narrow, and then you'd go back to Ein Isser Chal Al Isser. What is the nature of this principle or of this rule? Again, a rule that has more exceptions than the rule. So very quickly, we saw the Tosfos Yeshanim says it's a svara, and the Minchas Chinuch agreed. Minchas Chinuch said, because it's not based on a pasuk, it's not a gzeiras hakasav or a binyan av, because it's a svara, it's a logical conclusion, therefore it applies not only to Jews, but b'nei Noach, non-Jews also have rules. They have seven rules. Would you say ein iser chal al iser for a ben Noach? Forget what the technical example you'd have to come up with for them to violate an iser chal al iser, but the Minchas Chinuch says, yes, if it were derived from a pasuk, it would only apply to a Jew. But because it derives from a svara, it applies equally to a Jew and a non-Jew. B'nei Noach also have ein iser chal al iser. What is the svara? The Tosfos of Shadam doesn't even tell us, takes it for granted. The Minchas Chinuch has some very broad notion. Remember, his lashon was, the svara is, kevan de mushbava omed hu, ein chal alav od iser. Your mushbava omed, ein chal alav od iser. You already have an iser in place. The second iser doesn't seem to add anything. What is the svara? We'll have to come back to it. The Tosfos and Sanhedrin learned from a binyan av. They learned the Tosfos from the case of a kohen tamei, an impure kohen who's not allowed to eat truma, who's eating truma, which is tamei, that even a pure kohen can't eat. There's two surim involved. He's impure, and the truma is impure. Impure, he can't eat truma. Even pure, he can't eat impure truma. He's both impure and the truma is impure. The more severe penalty, the second, would give you misa, would give you death. But we say ein iser chal al iser from the we learn it from a binyan av from here. And Tosfos writes yafina minod ba'alma de ein iser chal al iser. We learn it to other places. The Rush in Nazir quoted Rabbeinu Tam, who learned it from the case of a Nazir who drinks wine on Yom Kippur. Even though we gave Yom Kippur as an example of an iser kolel, the Rabbeinu Tam says to disagree, and he says if a Nazir drinks wine on Yom Kippur, ein iser chal al iser. He's already liable for drinking wine. He would not be liable for doing so on Yom Kippur. And that's where we learn it from and apply it everywhere else. We said, based on this notion that ein iser chal al iser for Yom Kippur, Rav Asher Weiss had this tshuva with the story of Rav Yisrael Salanter, either true or apocryphal or partially apocryphal, that one year there was a cholera outbreak and Rav Yisrael Salanter got up in his shul and he ostensibly made kiddush and on Yom Kippur to convince the whole community that they had to eat in order to save Pikuach Nefesh. What was unusual is nobody was sick. Everybody was perfectly healthy, but they had to eat to avoid getting sick. So the person who raised this story was trying to say, in a case where Echves, it's a fast day in Eretz Yisrael, it's incredibly hot, people are going to dehydrate, no one should have to fast, just like the case where even though no one is yet sick, but to avoid getting sick, if Rav Yisrael Salanter would do that for Yom Kippur, all the more so we can do so for minor fast days. Rav Asher Weiss doesn't like it for several reasons, and he's not the only one. He quotes several versions of the story, and he says, first of all, we paskin, if you eat on Yom Kippur, you don't make Kiddush first. Second of all, if you make Kiddush, you'd have to make Kiddush b'makom suda, which would require a kezias, and we say if you have to eat on Yom Kippur, you should eat chatzi shir, should eat less than a shir. So, several reasons he doesn't like the story. But there's another version of the story from the Av Beis Din of Bucharest, Rav Binyamin Zev Shaparan, and his Chubas Rabaz, and his version of the story was that Rav Yisrael Salanter announced, he sent out a constant contact email, he sent out a large tweet right before Yom Kippur, and he told all the people of his community they should take a neder to forbid all the food on themselves, that they are forbidden to eat any of the food. Why? Then when Yom Kippur comes, ein iser chal al iser. So the violation of a neder is allowed, the violation of Yom Kippur is kareis, so therefore you will avoid the more severe penalty because ein iser chal al iser. If they create an iser in advance, then they will save themselves from the greater iser later. He didn't like it, the Av Beis Din of Bucharest, Rav Moshe didn't like it, Rav Asher Weiss doesn't like it. You can read the rest of his tshuva to understand it. One of the reasons, we said, based on the Rabbeinu Tam quoted by the Rosh, said Nazir and Yom Kippur, so he didn't hold of an Isser, it wasn't an Isser Kolo. But one of the reasons not to like that story of Rav Yisrael Salanter, that he said, make a neder, then ein Isser Chalal Isser, is because Lav Davka, it'd have to be a neder, not a shvua, for the following reason we pointed out. Rav Chanan says, when do you say ein Isser Chalal Isser? And he asked the following question. The Gemara says that, he quotes first the Noda Behuda asked this question. The Noda Behuda wonders, the Gemara says in Shavuos Daf Chaf Aleph, Ein Shavua Chal al Isser. If you take an oath on an Isser, the Shavua is not Chal. Right? Ein Shavua Chal al Isser. So if I have Nevela that's Asser, and I want to make a Shavua, I hereby forbid myself to eat any Nevela, that Shavua is not Chal. The Shavuah is not binding. Why? The Gemara gives a reason, because Mushbava Omed Me'ar Sinai. Because what kind of Shavuah are you taking? You're such a grace of Kanaka, you're taking a Shavuah that you're not going to eat in the Nevela? You already took that Shavuah. When your ancestor took the Shavuah, when you took the Shavuah, when you were in Har Sinai, you're Mushbava Omed Me'ar Sinai. You took that Shavuah already. You're not a grace of Kanaka, so therefore the Shavuah is not Chal. And then other people wanted to know, why does the Gemara have to give a reason? Because Mushbava Omed Me'ar Sinai. Why did the Gemara have to give a reason? You already took the Shavuah, that's why the Shavuah is not Chal. Say the reason it's not chal is because ein isra chal al isra. As always, another Behuda's kasha. Another Behuda says the following: be'emes yeshin shnei atamim ein achanami. He gives. I wouldn't insult another Behuda, nor would I insult Balabatim to suggest he gave a Balabatish answer. But he answered ein achanami. There's two answers. The truth is because ein isra chal al isra. And because Mushbava made me'ar Sinai, they're both good answers. You could have said either answer, azoy. But Rav Chanan is Kobus Haaretz on Yavamas doesn't like that. And he says, no, that's not the reason. First of all, the Gemara would have said, because ein isra chal al isra, if it were a legitimate answer, it didn't have to come on to Mushbava Omed. So what's the reason the Gemara had to give a different answer? Why did the Gemara have to come on to Mushbava Omed Me'ar Sinai? And if you recall, we saw Rav Chanan had a fantastic explanation. He said, when do you say ein isra chal al isra? When both the Yisurim are violated, the same act is the driver. The same act is what is defined as both violations. But if the same act is not defined as both violations, then you would say ein isra chal al isra. So when you take a shvuah not to eat something that's a nevela, and you eat the nevela, it happens to be Rav Chanan was mechadish. It happens to be that when you eat the nevela, you're violating the shvuah, but the act of eating is not violating the shvuah. The violation of the shvuah is the fact that chilul hadibur is his lashon. You made a promise, you took a pledge, you took an oath, and you violated that oath. So the violation of the oath is the isser. It happens to be the oath was about eating, so the eating was the way you came to violate the isser. But if you took an oath that you're not going to drive a red Toyota, or you took an oath that you're not going to walk down that street, or you took an oath that you're not going to sleep in that bed, or you can take a shvuah on anything. So the violation of the shvuah was not the act of eating. It happens to be the act of eating was the violation of the shvuah because it happens to be that was your shvuah. But intrinsically and inherently, a shvuah is not violated by eating. A shvuah on eating is violated by eating. But that's not a inherent definition of the violation of a shvuah. That's chilul hadibur. So therefore he says, if you took a shvuah not to eat nevela, you would say isser chal al isser. Why? It's two separate isurim. One is you can't eat an isser nevela. The other is you can't violate an oath. It's a technicality. You violated the oath here by eating, but lav davka did it have to be the way you violated the oath. The two isurim are not inherently or intrinsically or by definition violated in the same way. So you would have said isser chal al isser if not for mushbava omed me'ar Sinai. And says Rav Chanan, that's why, for example, a person who puts a kazayas of food in their mouth and they walk from Rosh Hashanah to Shus Rabban, Shabbos is Yom Kippur, and they're walking with the Rosh Hashanah and Shus Rabban with the food in their mouth, chewing, and they swallow it. So they violate Hotzah on Shabbos, they carried on Shabbos, and they also violate eating on Yom Kippur. Would you say Ein Isra Chal al Isra? He said, you'd say Yisr Chal al Isr. It's two separate things. One is you carry from one Rishus to the other, and the other is that you ate on Yom Kippur. You did both with the same food in your same mouth. That's a coincidence. It just happens to be that the way you were carrying was in your mouth. But Lav Davka is that the inherent intrinsic definition of carrying. So the only time Rabbi Chanan qualifies that you say Ein Isr Chal al Isr is when the same Isr, so eating a Nevela, which is also a Trefa, eating a... then intrinsically, the act of eating is the driver, is the definition of the two isurim. But if the isurim are not by definition defined by that same act, even if you happen to be violating both through the same act, you've just learned how to violate isurim efficiently. But they're not really the same act that violates the isurim. So then you would not say isur chal al isur, you ain't isur chal al isur. And that's why, says Rabbi Chanan, this was page 9, that the Gemara had to come on, mushba va'omed. Now, if Rav Yisrael Salanter said, make a neder, and then ein isra chal al isra. So according to Rabbi Chanan, what do you mean? Unless you say, maybe neder is different than shvuah. Neder is on the cheftza, the shvuah is on the gavra. So maybe there's a difference between the two. We'll leave that aside because the Achronim reject that story of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter for lots of reasons that you wouldn't say Einis Echel Isser, and that brought us up to this week. So it took us 10 minutes to get up to this week. Okay.
Can you do that to make a neder, knowing that you're going to do another Avera so that you should circumvent the whole thing?
So they don't like his argument for, right, they don't like that idea for several reasons. Can you take a neder as an effort to, will that even work? They don't like it for several reasons. Okay, that brings us up to this week. So they said, the classic, I ended last week by telling you, what?
It's like Mevatli Yisrael Achatchil.
It's a halachic loophole. Does it really work? I mentioned at the end of last week, as a preview to this week, that was the background. First of all, we saw what the principle, Einis Echel Isser. We saw there are four exceptions to the rule, which in fact, we spend more time on the exceptions than we do the rule. We talked about what's the makor, what's the source. Is it a svara? Is it a gzeras hakasav? Which pasuk do we learn it from? What's the makor? And when do we use it? When do we not use it? We saw Rabbi Chanan. Now the question, the classic hakira, which is offered on the Einis Echel Isser, is the following. When you say Einis Echel Isser, are you saying the second Isser is not chal at all? For you, it doesn't apply, it doesn't exist, there is no Isser. Once you are already caught on an Isser, so we got you. You're caught on the Isser. You're liable for the consequences of an Isser. So the second Isser is if it does not even there at all. Or do you say, no, the second Isser is there, and you violated it. The punishment is what we're not going to give you a double punishment. What does Ein Isser Chal Isser teach you? Does it teach you that Ein Onesh Chal Al Onesh, that there's no punishment once you're already liable? I thought it's what double jeopardy, but it's not what double jeopardy means, apparently. But it's my version of double jeopardy. We're not going to make you liable a second time if you're already liable once. Is that what it means? Or no, it means that altogether there's not even the separate second Isser. It's like a classic Hutcher D'chuyah about Shabbos. When we say, Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Shabbos, is it that there still is an Isser Shabbos, but just it is Docha? We put it aside. The Pikuach Nefesh comes first, but of course you're still warned in Shabbos, or no Hutra. The second it's in conflict with Shabbos, there never was an obligation to keep Shabbos if it's in conflict with Pikuach Nefesh. It's similar to a Hutra Tchuyah. Ein Isser Chal Isser. Does that only relieve you of the onesh of the punishment? Or it means there's not even an Isser. What's a nafkamina? A chakira without a nafkamina is nishkan chakira. So what's the nafkamina? Whether you're only absolved of the punishment or even of the isser? Do you have to do tshuva? Do you not have to do tshuva for it? So maybe you only have to do tshuva for things that you'd get an onesh for. But let's assume you have to do tshuva even for things you wouldn't get an onesh for. Good, that's one nafkamina. Do you have to do tshuva? Do you have to bother doing tshuva for the second? Only do tshuva for the first one. Second one, maybe you don't have to do tshuva. So the Gemara itself, this is one of those rare cases, the Gemara itself gives a nafkamina on a chakira. Page number 10, this is what we're up to. Page 10 is the Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Tes Vav. Daf Lamed Beis, sorry. Yevamos Lamed Beis, Lamed Beis. Page 10. One line, I underlined it for you. This is the Gemara is giving this chakira. Ki asa rav enam rabbi yochan amalan yalav kilu asa beis ve'ino chayev ela achas. On the tzad in the Gemara, on the tzad of the chakira, on the one side of the chakira, that you did two things, but eino chayav ela achas, but you're only liable for one, my nafkamina. So what makes it that you did two if you're only liable for one? What's the nafkamina? If we say you're exempt from two punishments, I understand that what it means, ein isser chal isser. But if it means that the isser is still there, what does that do? So the Gemara says, nafkamina is lekavra bein rishayim gemurim. To bury him among the rishayim arurim. To bury somebody among the evil Rishon. What does that mean? What does that mean? In the time of the Gemara, I once gave a shir on this previously, on Shavuos, when we did Mythbusters, and the topic of, can people with tattoos be buried in a Jewish cemetery? That was the topic of one of my shirim on that Shavuos. And we discussed, the Gemara already says that a Jewish cemetery used to be divided. We're used to the notion that you have to have designated a Jewish cemetery. It's not part of or integrated or mixed with a non-Jewish cemetery. We consider a Jewish cemetery consecrated ground. Recently we consecrated a new Jewish cemetery north of us, a cemetery specifically to be affordable for the indigent. It's a beautiful, brilliant way to combat cremation. Everything's kedasah kedin, a purely halachic cemetery. So there was a whole day, Rabbi Zon flew down, and there was a whole ceremony, a long cemetery, walking seven times. There's a whole consecration ceremony. How you consecrate a Jewish cemetery. to be holy land, designated holy land. So we're used to the idea that Jews have to have a cemetery. But Medina de Gemara, and the Shulchan Aruch records this, it used to be that not only would you have one cemetery, in the cemetery it would be divided with different sections. Here are the people who daven quickly, here are the people who daven slowly. Here's the ones who talked in davening, here's the ones who required in davening. Here's the one who gave Meiser, and the stingy ones who didn't give enough tzedakah. Here's the Beinonim, the Tzadikim, the Rishayim Arurim, the Rishayim Gemurim. So people were, this is the origin, by the way, that you paid and you signed up to be a member of a Chevra Kadisha. You were designating with whom you wanted to spend eternity. Who would you want to be buried with? You didn't want to be part of a society of the talkers, of the stingy, of the Shabbos violators. You wanted to be in a Shomer Shabbos Chevra Kadisha. So the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch already records a cemetery had different designated sections. And this is where the myth began that someone with a tattoo can't be buried in a Jewish cemetery. Of course they can. When the cemetery had different sections, there would be a section. I don't think it was for people with tattoos, but it was for people with tattoos, that people spoke Lashon Hara. There's a lot. You could be fully Shomer Shabbos and speak a lot of Lashon Hara, or cheat on your taxes, or be indicted in business, and you get a lesser spot than the people with tattoos who are honest and have integrity. So it was a myth that a person with a tattoo can't be in a Jewish cemetery, but it was only a partial myth because there was a notion cemeteries were divided. We don't today have as much division. We still have Jewish as opposed to non-Jewish. And there are sections of cemeteries that have rules that you have to have been Shomer Shabbos. They have different rules. And people request where they want to be buried and with whom they want to be buried and so on and so forth. So, again, I gave a whole share on this. I don't think I ever recorded it and put it online. It was on Yontif, but the source sheets are now online on my new website if anyone wants to see it, rabbiefremgoldberg.org. There's hundreds and hundreds of source sheets there. So the Gemara here gives the nafkamina. What's the difference if you are relieved, if you're absolved of the second punishment because ein iser chal al iser? What's the nafkamina that you violated a second iser? Gemara said, where you get buried in the cemetery. True, while you were alive, you only got 40 malchus instead of 80. You got one set of lashes instead of two because ein iser chal al iser. But when it's time for the Chevra Kadisha to meet and speak some Lashon Hara about you and decide where you go, they're going to say, you remember? He ate the thing with also violated the other thing. So true, he didn't get two sets of malchus. But legabe the malchus, it was ein iser chal al iser. But legabe, where we put him in the cemetery, he violated two isurim. So the Gemara gives us our first nafkamina. What does it mean, iser, chal al iser, for the iser, just not for the onash? The first nafkamina is to be buried among Rishayim Gemurim, Rishayim Marurim, where you get buried in the cemetery. Page number 11. A second nafkamina, the Beis HaLevi. The Beis HaLevi, Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, the Rav's great-grandfather. The Beis HaLevi says, you want a second nafkamina? Here you go. The arrow on the bottom right. Simon Memdalid in the Chelik Aleph of Tshuva's Beis HaLevi. Cholo b'yam ha-kipurim, the kaimalan de-machilin oso ha-kal ha-kal t'chila. The halacha is that if somebody is ill and they need to eat on Yom Kippur, we allow them to eat. Now, if they need to eat any measure in any time frame, of course, pikuach nefesh is docha. Of course, sustaining their life supersedes Yom Kippur. Eat whatever measure in whatever time allotment because you need to stay alive. But if doctors will allow a person to eat less than a shear, so of course we tell people, drink less than 3.4, eat less than 3.4 fluid ounces, less than every 7 minutes, 9 minutes, 4 minutes, the different shiurim that are offered, both in quantity and b'chdei achilas pras, in terms of the time. And we have hakal hakal tchila. The rule is that we ask the person who even is allowed to eat on Yom Kippur to begin by minimizing what they violate, and only increase the level of what they're violating as necessary. So, if you need to define a kezayis most strictly to start with, if that's not enough food or liquid, then be more liberal with your definition of a revius, of a kezayis, of bichtei achilas pras. Eat something that's of less prohibition, and only if you need something more intense, then eat something that's of more prohibition. So the halacha is that even someone who needs to eat on Yom Kippur, who's allowed to eat on Yom Kippur, should minimize the isurim they're violating, and only increase the isurim they're violating as is necessary. So one does the Nod Behuda. Yesh la ayin. B'yesh lefanu chaticha shal iser echad v'chaticha shini yesh shnei yisurim rak de'in iser chal al iser im yesh lehaktim ha-chaticha shal iser echad. This person has two pieces of food in front of him. One piece of food only violates one iser. The second piece of food violates two isurim. So would you say that when he's allowed to eat on Yom Kippur, he should start by eating the food that only has one iser? So we say ein iser chalal iser. So the Beis Halevi says, if ein iser chalal iser means there's no second iser at all, it doesn't matter which bit of food he eats. But if ein iser chalal iser only means that he doesn't get punished, but the iser remains in force, in place, then he should start with the piece of food that only has one iser and work his way up to the piece of food with two iser. That's nafkamina. You wouldn't have thought of any of these nafkamina. I wouldn't have thought of any of these nafkaminas. You certainly won't think of the next nafkamina. That's nafkamina number two is Yom Kippur. If you're allowed to eat, hakala kal tchila, do you have to start with the one iser or can you go right to the piece of food that's two isurim because ein iser chalal iser? How do you understand ein iser chalal iser? Skip to page 13. We'll come back to 12. This is nafkamina number three. It comes from Rav Yosef Engel. Rav Yosef Engel in a Sefer Beis HaOtzar has a nafkamina none of you would have thought. I hope you wouldn't have thought of. He says the following: Nistapakti koin gadol haba al achoso almana. A koin gadol sleeps with his widowed sister. Now, Rav Yosef Engel doesn't have a distorted mind. He's not the one who came up with that. The Gemara already has an example of a koin gadol with his widowed sister. But Rav Yosef Engel saw it as a nafkamina in this shaila. What's the nafkamina? How is that a nafkamina? Koin gadol is not allowed to sleep with his sister. No one can sleep with their sister. Kohen Gadol, in addition, can't sleep with a widow. When he sleeps with his sister, who's a widow, inaseis chalala. Does she become a chalala? Meaning, if there's only a violation of sleeping with a sister, regardless of his status as the Kohen Gadol, that won't impact her status. But if the second iser, the fact that he's the Kohen Gadol and she's an almana, is also violated, now she, it impacts her status and she becomes a chalala, ineligible to any further Kohen. L'man damar in iser chalal iser, v'pshitas nir, dekem de'en chalala el misure kahuna, v'kan disar almana ho lachayel, en kana el iser achoso, de'en iser kahuna, v'lo nasis chalala. So if you say that ein iser chalal iser means the second iser is not chalal all, so that Kohen Gadol had no iser to sleep with an almana. He was already violating sleeping with achoso with his sister. Ein iser chalal iser means there is no second violation, so she can't become a chalala. Her status won't change if there's no violation being violated. However, if you say ulam man da'amar that the ein iser chalal iser and rak l'inyan onesh, aval etzem ha'iser chal im kein yira demis chalalas mipas etzem ha'iser. So if you say that no, only the punishment is relieved, but the second iser remains in place, so then there are two violations that happened here. One, he slept with his sister. Two, as the Kohen Gadol, he slept with an almana, she will become a chalala as a result. So Rav Yosef Engel brings it as a third nafkamina. Does ein iser chalal iser mean just the onesh or even the iser? Nafkamina number one, we said, was where do you bury? Nafkamina number two is Yom Kippur. If you have to eat, you have to start with the thing that only has one iser versus two. And number three is a Kohen Gadol sleeping with his widowed sister.
But he gets in this wicked section.
Good, so he has the rest of this piece here, but he's working off an assumption. It's an excellent point. It's my father-in-law. Excellent point. So he's working off the assumption that her status can only change as the result of an iser being violated. But if you say ein iser chalal iser, so is there an iser which is violated? You're asking something different, which is for him, but for her also it's ein iser chalal iser. She's achos, she's sleeping with her brother. She's an iser arayas too. Right, so is the iser only on a kohen gadol to sleep with an almana, or is the almana also usher to a kohen gadol? I guess, but either way, she can only become a chalala if the kohen gadol violated something. If he didn't violate something, certainly she didn't violate something because ein iser chalal iser, so then she's not going to result in being a chalala. So he's working with that assumption that the status of chalala is, and it's a very compelling assumption, the status of chalala is the result of an iser being violated. It's not, if there's no iser violated, then her status is not going to change. She's not necessarily a zona. Why? Because the achoso?
She has the status of a zona, so immediately, no matter whether it's
her. Why does she have the status of a zona? She have the iser arayas. Why does she have the status of a zona? That doesn't necessarily make you the status of a zona. The Rambam's mufker lakol.
Every time a woman is a halala, it's because of the problem with the man, not with her.
Okay.
Right? So that,
again, you could look, if you see it's four long paragraphs long, feel free to read the rest of Yosef Engel inside. I don't want to get into it, but look on the top left column. Again, you can read the rest of this piece. Od nira yishlamar afagav de enes chalas hani raklin yin onash va'avira sa'adam afilam adam adlekov ronami ein chal hani gam ken rak de ein al adam shum onash vein nechshav lo avira shnia klal rak avira rishon levad aval mikoma kama paula she yesh ala iser gun chil al isha chedoma shaperu paul gam kesh yesh kvar iser kodom. So this Abba, this is what you were saying. The other way of understanding it is that no, Chalal is not the result of onesh, nor is it the result of iser, it's the result of an action. So you can absolve of the onesh, you can even not be liable for iser, but you can't deny there was an action. So what creates the status of chalal? What makes a woman a chalala? The act being an act of iser, the act being an act of iser that has an onesh. So that's a shas sukkah in chalala. That's for shiur another time. What makes a woman a chalala? Is it that the act was violated? Is it that the act happened and it was forbidden? Is it that the act happened and it was forbidden and there's punishment? Again, Rav Yosef Engel goes through the different possibilities here, but just wanted to bring it more broadly as a nafkamina on this general question.
Does
what?
Does Bavas Achas come into play here at all?
Bavas Achas, right, because both Isurim...
Can't happen at exactly the same
no,
time.
No, because Bavas Achas does not fall, I'll tell you why. Bas Achas does not mean that he slept with her, so both Yisurim happened. Bas Achas mean she was his sister before, I'm going to assume he became the Kohen Gadol. And she was his sister before she was widowed.
Let's say
so her status vis-a-vis him didn't happen by Bas Achas. Sister. First she was his sister, and she was widowed later. So
let's
that's the definition of Bas Achas.
Let's create an Ukimta, for example, let's say where he became a Kohen Gadol either at the same time or before she was born.
So
what? She didn't become. Hold on. She didn't become a widow though. Her problem is the widow. Forget it's Kohen Gadol. So she was born and she had to be a widow later. First she was achosa before she was almana. So that's why it's not Bas Achas. Okay, weiter. So that was a third nafkamina in this classic chakira. Back to source number 12. Why is Einis a Chalal Iser? For the Tosfos Yishanim and for the Minchas Chinuch, it was an obvious svara. Mushbav Omi, whatever that meant. Why is Einis a Chalal Iser? So the Sholem Eishev of Rav Yosef Shaul Nathanson, on page 12, has the following, if you have your magnifying glass out. Hine b'mesheherech ha'pri megodim shalmim iser lav chalal asei, v'hevi divrei Rambam, Hilchos Trumos, Tomei Sha'ochel Truma Tmeya Da'afshu B'Lav Eino Lokesh or Eino Kodesh D'mashma Dinis Ma'it Ula Yichalu Zeh Mechulav Omid Aval Lo Mitam Shelo Chal V'Yazeh Kosov De'ein Ra'i De'emes Lididon Eino Sechal Lissa Kishu B'Kolal V'Lekach Tzarek Kro Tmeyan Nirik Ila Fine Chidushu Zos V'umafurish B'Shas Chulin Af Afisha Eino Lifnei Fanai Yefshe Lefarish Levar V'ubatz Mevi Divrei Hashas Halos. Ach, Lafian is daiti. Here's the key, where the arrow is. Says the Sholem Eishev. Lafian is daiti kavana amuka bedivir rabbeinu. Din lafian is daiti, inyan enes achal iser, ha'omer b'chomakum, hu de be'emes kol kavanas onshe atoro hu lo l'nekama, rak l'man shalo yosef lasos kezos. V'hanisharam yishmu v'yiro. The purpose of when the Torah gives you a punishment is not to be punitive. The purpose of a punishment is not to be punitive. What's the purpose of a punishment? To disincentivize or to incentivize a person not to do the wrong thing. The reason the Torah gives a punishment is everyone should hear and see and then not follow. So once something is already prohibited, and a person is going to suffer the consequence, and others will see, what's the purpose of adding or duplicating the exact same iser? If you know something's forbidden already once, so you're not going to eat it. What do you have to know that the person did it twice? So Says the Sha'ar L'Meshiv, the whole reason for Einus Achal Al-Isser is, if it doesn't add, if it simply duplicates and it's redundant, then there's no point. And that's why the Torah says you're liable for the primary thing you violated. And if subsequently you were at the same time, not at the same time, but if you're violating several things with the one act, but it doesn't expand or add or intensify what you're violating, then you're still only liable for one, because we already got you on once. We've indicted you, we've incriminated you, you're accountable once. Everyone will see and they'll be motivated not to do what you did. Because the purpose of citing an Isser and the purpose of citing an Onesh is to motivate you to be in your best behavior, not to do the wrong thing. So long as the second Isser doesn't add or expand or intensify either the prohibition or its consequence, then there's no point in holding you accountable for it, and therefore the rule is Ein Isser Chal al Isser, unless it's intensifying. So Chomer or Kola L'Mosif, where you are in. L'kach Amr Nafkamina L'Kovra Ben Rishon Gemurim. So you see that the Sha'ar L'Meshiv is taking a position. What's his position? That Einus Achal Isser means only legabe the onesh. Only regarding the punishment does the second Isser not apply. Why? Because the whole purpose of these punishments is to motivate. So if you're duplicating the motivation, there's no purpose to duplicating motivation. But no... He says, that's why the Gemara said, but Rishayim Gemurim, where you're buried, meaning the stain, the blemish on your character, what you've done, so Phil, to do tshuva on Yom Kippur, for sure you got to do tshuva on Yom Kippur. In Isser, you violated. The consequences, so doing tshuva on Yom Kippur and where you get buried in the cemetery, yes. The Isser is there. There's just no nafkamina to add an onesh. Amakosha chalafa isser arishon shuv chayal asheni. Ulefiza tzarech biur manyan leshvua dein chal davar isser, ay shvua chal davar amutter, chal shvua vator onsho, and so on and so forth. He goes on. So what she's saying also is that because the second isser remains in force, if for some reason the first isser were lifted, the second isser would kick in. Because we never said he's taking the tzad like the prima godim, that Einus Achal Isser just means you're exempt from the punishment, but the Isser remains in force in place. So because of that, if for some reason the first Isser were removed, and the Gemara has a complicated case of this, where you sleep with a woman who's your what's the Gemara's case? Your wife's sister, who's also your brother's wife. So let's say your brother divorces her. She's no longer your brother's wife, but she's still your wife's sister. Right. But let's say you married the sister after your brother married her, your brother divorced her, whatever the case may be, but you could have a case where there's Isser and Isser, and the first Isser is removed, the second Isser then was waiting. The Gemara's Lashon there is, it's hanging in balance, it's waiting to be Chal, because it never disappeared. Einus Achal Isser, he's bringing that as a Raya. Einus Achal Isser doesn't mean the second Isser disappeared altogether. It meant you're not liable, you're not accountable, because we don't duplicate accountability. But the Isser itself, i.e. where you're buried in the cemetery and having to do the tshuva, that remains, that part remains in force. Okay? Yeah.
Like eating a flying insect, you get one more set of malchus than eating only a crow. How does that fit into this paradigm?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
That if you eat an insect, it's only the forma of...
That you're speaking about the specific Isser. That's the definition of that particular Isser. That doesn't have to do with Isser Chal Isser. That's that Isser.
So why is that the flying insect?
It's a different Isser. That's the definition of an Isser of an insect. Okay. So Ad Kan, the first half of the Shir I wanted to give on Ein Isser Chal Isser, Shasta Gishir. The second half is, now we're going to go to the Rambam's Nekuda Nifla. Oh. Were you there when I gave this Chabur a couple weeks ago, Phil? No. Okay, you were there. So we didn't get to fully unpack it. We'll get to go much slower now. The Rambam has a Nekuda Nifla. The words Nekuda Nifla mean a wondrous, mind-blowing insight. Now, I'm not giving it that name, Nekuda Nifla. Who gave it the name Nekuda Nifla? The Rambam. This is in the Rambam's Perush HaMishnayos in the third parak of Krisis. The Rambam wrote Perush HaMishnayos when he was a young man. It's the first thing he wrote. If you find a stira between the Perush Mishnayos and his Mishnah Torah, you always follow the Mishnah Torah because Perush Mishnayos was written young. Page 14. We don't often There's certain parish of Mishnayos that everyone knows because they became famous because there's something significant. So this is one of the most famous Rambam's commentaries in his parish of Mishnayos. It's on the third parak of Krisus. And he refers to it, if you look at the left-hand column where I underlined, Yesh b'mesha nishanu v'nasanu achshav nekuda nifla anu miyadim aleh. Oh, there is among the words, the insight that we just offered, oh, there's a nekuda nifla. It's so brilliant and mind-boggling, and it opens the door to many other issues. And it expands your knowledge even after you've closely analyzed this situation. What is the Rambam's Nekuda Nifla? We're going to go slowly here to understand the Rambam's Nekuda Nifla. The Rambam says the following. Let's see where we should start. If you look at the third line on the right-hand column, page 14. It's Perish HaMishnayis and Krisus. Zog the Rambam. Yesh b'kan en yonim ru'uyim she'avar osam l'chach derech k'tzara. There are things here that I should give you a little brief overview. K'dei she'izbor l'cha behem kol ha'alachas ha'ilu she'perak hazeh. I want you to know Krisus, the third parak. Let me give you a little intro. Ubehem yisbor lecha mashenem b'hem mishlishi v'yavomos b'halacha sheftachnu yisham l'dar l'daber b'mokam hazeh. There we said we'd speak about it here. V'zeu sha'yisurim harab m'shachalam adavar iser yif shar ela b'echad mishloshet stodim o b'kulam v'hu iser mosiv iser kolov iser basachas v'yif shar sheyachol iser al iser ela b'elu ha'shloshepanim. For an iser b'chalal iser, it has to only be if it's one of these three exceptions. The Rambam has three exceptions. And they are Mosif, Kolel, and Basachas. He doesn't mention Chamor. Because the general rule is, one Isser cannot be Chal on another. What's an example? Kigon. Let's go slowly. You have Basar Nevela. What's Basar Nevela? Basar Nevela is the non-kosher meat they're selling in Publix. Means, it's potentially a kosher animal, but it met its demise not through shechita. It was shot by a hunter, it was run over by a truck, it died a natural death, it's a nevela. So you have some meat you buy in Publix. Or, basar behema tmeya. Basar behema tmeya means it's the meat of a non-kosher animal. So either it's from a kosher animal, but it wasn't shechted, that's nevela. Or, it's from a non-kosher animal. Or, you have chaylev. You have, chaylev is the prohibited fat of an animal. Those learning the Daf Yomi spent much more time than they ever wanted to on examining the fats of kidneys and of lungs and different body parts of Giranasha and what fat is what. Not all fat was created equal. Chaylev is prohibited fat. Shuman is the permissible fat. Not according to your cardiologist, but according to Halacha. So, chaylev is the prohibited fat. So you have either a non-kosher piece of meat, it means it's from a kosher animal, but it wasn't shechted, that's nevela, or meat from a non-kosher animal, or fat from a kosher animal that was shechted. So we have all three scenarios. Either it was a kosher animal, but it wasn't shechted, it was a non-kosher animal, it's a kosher animal that was shechted properly, but chaylev is still prohibited from it. Those are the three scenarios. And any of those three that you cook with milk, so now you have the primary iser, nevela, tmeya, or chaylev. You have the second iser, which is basar b'chalav, you cooked it with milk. So do you say, will you get two sets of malchus or one? Two sets of malchus or one? So I would have said, let's put our heads together. Nevela, tmeya, and chaylev, if you eat them, what do you get? Malchus. Does Basar B'chalav introduce anything new? Remember our rules. Does it introduce anything new? It's more stringent. Why is it more stringent? Because it has an Isser Hana. So, if you apply our rules, that when the second Isser intensifies or expands the ways in which there's a prohibition, so you're not allowed to eat a nevela, you can't eat a tamei, you can't eat chaylev. But once you cook any of those three with milk, now basar b'chalav is a category that not only can you not eat, you also can't benefit. So for example, anyone here have a pet? You have a dog? Don't be shy, you can admit it if you have a dog. Good. You have a dog. Two dogs. A lot of dog. Don't answer this. A lot of dog food, from what I understand. If you look in the ingredient panel of dog food, you'll see that it has meat and milk. Now, when the dog food you have is meat and milk, and let's assume the meat and milk were cooked together. If they weren't cooked together, it's a rabbinic prohibition, not a biblical one. To have the biblical prohibition of basa b'chala, they have to be cooked together. So if you have meat and milk cooked together, are you allowed to feed it to your dog? So you'll say,
if it's kosher, no.
Is it kosher meat? The odds that they bought shechted, glatt kosher meat to mix with milk to put in your dog food are not a million to one. They are
non-existent,
the odds. Right? There's no question that the meat in the dog food is nevela. It's probably not basar tmeya. It's not a non-kosher animal. It's nevela. It's a kosher animal. That's nevela. So nevela mixed with milk, are you allowed to feed it to your dog? So I would have said, do you say isser chalal isser? I'm, first of all, I'm not allowed to eat the meat because it was a nevela. And when you mix it with milk, do you say, I haven't added any new isser? So there is no basar b'chalav here, there's only nevela. And yes, I can feed it to my dog. Or do you say, now there's an isser hana'ah introduced, so it's an exception. So isser chalal isser, and now I can't feed it to my dog. So what would I have said?
Why do you assume nevela is meat?
In dog food?
What
do you mean?
You're defining
nevela. No, but let's say we're taking a scenario where I call the dog company and I say, your ingredients list meat and milk, what's the meat? And they say, we go to the slaughterhouse and the parts of the cow that they can't sell, we put in the dog food. It's nevela. Cow is a kosher animal, but it didn't have shechita, so the meat's a nevela. So the meat's in the veil, it's asar ba'achila. I can't eat the meat. Now I mixed it with milk, I cooked it with milk to make dog food. So does the second isser of basar b'chalav kick in and bring with it hana'ah? Or do you say, ein isser chalal isser, the only prohibition is still of nevela, and it's asar ba'achila, don't eat your dog's dog food, but you can serve your dog food because ein isser chalal isser. So I can tell you what I would have said. Yeah. Basar b'chalav. So now, I'll tell you what I would have said. I would have said isser chalal isser. First, there was only an isser achila. You added an isser hana'ah, isser chalal isser, and now you can't feed it to your dog food. The Rambam says, ain isser chalal isser. Ain isser chalal isser. That's what the Rambam says. Ain isser chalal isser. And the Rambam is so proud that that's why he calls it a nekuda nifla.
He leaves out.
Correct, correct. But why should this be different? Now the Rambam goes even further. Because the Rambam says the following. The Rambam says, what if you're makdish, the dog food? I'm giving the example of the dog food. You have something that's asar ba'achila. You have nevela that you're makdish. You declare it hektish. Hektish is also asar ba'na. Would the isser of hektish, of me'ila, be chal on the isser achila? If you're makdish nevela, or tmeya, or chelev, you have a piece of chelev. So you shechted a beautiful cow, and you're going to barbecue the delicious rib steak. But the chelev from the cow is usher. You're not allowed to eat it. And you declare, this chelev, I can't eat it, but I makdish it. I hereby dedicate it to Hashem. So would you say isser chal al isser? And the isser hektish is chal on the isser achila of the chelev? Or no? Ain isser chal al isser. So again, let's apply our rules. Does isser hektish increase or intensify or expand any of the prohibition?
Yes.
Why? Hektish is asr b'ana. Hektish is asr b'ana. So the Rambam here says, correct, I agree. Hektish is asr b'ana, and therefore, isser chalal isser. But still, in the case of basar b'chalav, ain isser chalal isser. And that's his nekuda nifla. He says, this is my nekuda nifla. That even though a hektish on chelev sounds awfully like basar b'chalav on chelev, but hektish on chelev, isser chalal isser, because you're adding isser ana. Basar b'chalav on chelev, even though there would be isser ana, you're not, ain isser chalal isser remains in place. And the Rambam says, this so geschmack my point, that it's a nekuda nifla. Go chew on that. Go chew on my nekuda nifla. Look at after the underline of the left-hand column. V'achelev derech bishul mutar bana. Even though it's true that basar b'chalav, the left-hand column, under the underline, right after the Rambam talks about it being a nekud d'nifla. Even though it's known basar b'chalav is also to benefit from, v'chelev derech bishul mutar bana. And if I boil fat, it's mutar bana. I can't eat it, but I can still benefit. L'kashe yivushal achelev im achalav. This gets tricky, by the way. A lot of the achronim, they put in parentheses next to each word, tserei or komatz. Chelev or chalav. Chelev is fat, chalav is milk. Lama inachal iser basar b'chalav al iser chelev. The Rambam is asking on himself. According to all of our rules, where basar b'chalav adds a prohibition to benefit, you should say iser chal iser. The Rav himself is asking, why is it different than Hektish? Hektish, you say Yisr Chal Yisr because we've added the Hana. Why don't we say with Basar B'chalav, B'chalav, that Yisr Chal Yisr because you're adding Hana? Hatshuva Zeh, Shebasar B'chalav Nasar B'Hana, Mipnei She'asru Akasav La'achila. Mishnechnas Adar. So, looks like we're going to have to pick up with this next week. Next week I'm not here. It's APAC. Mitzvah Shem Bli. Maybe the week after. We'll have to figure out when we're going to pick up. So let's go quickly. Let me just give you some insight. What does the Rambam mean? The Rambam says when it comes to Basar B'chalav, the Isser Achila is not an Isser Achila. When it comes to Basar B'chalav, the Isser Achila is an Isser Hanna'ah. We've just defined hana as achila. So when we say it's asr b'hana, we're expanding on the isr achila that already exists, as opposed to other times where there's an isr hana independent of the isr achila. So when you're makdish on nevela, when you're makdish chelev, so the isr achila is on the chelev, and the isr hana is not only achila, it's hana in any way. But basar b'chalav, the ana extends from the isra achila. I could say the words, I'm translating the words the Rambam wrote, but what exactly does that mean? It's very hard to understand exactly what he means. So basar b'chalav, you get ana by giving it to your dog, or by giving it to your non-Jewish business associate, or by selling it in business, or use it as fertilizer, right? But that hana'a it's an extension of the Yisra Achila, which itself was hana'a, as opposed to other Yisra hana'a, which is not an extension of an Yisra Achila, which was hana'a, but is an altogether parallel Yisra hana'a. Complicated, granted, which is why the Achronim have to all jump in here and give their explanations. So we'll pick up next time, but we'll see. Rav Ochanan has his explanation, pages 15 and 16, and that's where he gets into the question of, is Isser Chal al Isser just the Onesh or even the Isser? The Meshech Chochmah of Meir Simcha has a beautiful pshat on pages 17 and 18. I'll just give you a hint about his pshat. It's fantastic. He says the reason it's Chal, Isser is Chal al Isser with Hektish is because the Gemara says it calls Hektish Mamon Gavoa. Hektish Mamon Gavoa means that when I violate Hektish, I haven't violated Isser, I violated Dinei Mamonus. I stole something that wasn't mine. You see, if I eat something that's prohibited, I violated Isser V'Heter. Those are religious rules, which are different than civil or criminal rules. If I steal, that's a criminal rule. If I eat something that's prohibited, that's not a criminal rule, it's a religious rule. So when you violate Hektish, if you do Me'ilah, if you get benefit from something that you pledged, it's mamon gavoa. So the Meshech Chochmah's pshat in the Rambam is that enes achal iser is iser and iser. But once it's hektish, then it's mamon chalal iser. And since hektish is mamon gavoa, it's mamon chalal iser. If you didn't follow, that's okay. We'll pick up with it much more carefully next time. After that, we have the Minchas Osher. Rav Osher Weiss has a essay on the subject explaining the Rambam's Nekuda Nifla. And then finally, what I'm most excited about is a fantastic Reb Shimon, a beautiful Reb Shimon Shkop on Isser Chalal Isser based on the Rambam's Nekuda Nifla. It's a Geshmak insight, Chefetz Gavra of Reb Shimon Shkop. And then the last piece is a piece answering exactly our question about dog food. What is the policy on dog food? From a sefer called Gan Shoshanim. You may not have heard of the sefer, but you heard of its author. His name is Rav Menachem Ganachovsky, otherwise known as Rav Menachem Ganak. His original name is Ganachovsky. Anyway, in the sefer Gan Shoshanim, he has an essay on this and concludes with his position, ostensibly the OU's position, on does dog food need a hechsher in order to give it to your food? Can you get hana? Can you get hana from this mixture? We'll pick up next time. Back with the Rambam's Nekuda Nifla. Have a fantastic time with Chris Sager, with Rabbi Moshe Shapit.